Children, we're starting.
That's right.
Showtime! Another Fresh Picked Pod from audiotou.com. Shutters Inc. with Shelton Muller.
You might wish to stay on and listen.
Hi, and welcome to episode 81 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from audiotou.com. With me on the line from Melbourne via Skype once again, Shelton Muller. How are you?
Hey, mate, I'm pretty good. It's a pretty rainy Melbourne today.
Oh, is that right?
Oh, look, it's miserable out there.
Living up to its image.
It is Melbourne finally living up to its elusive reputation. Well, not so elusive, but because that seems to be an established reputation. But yeah. For those who aren't familiar with Melbourne, they tell us that it's four seasons in one day, like a crowded house song, you know. It is, well, it's one season today. It's miserable. we're getting water, and we can all start showering again. I think Melbourne is the city with the dirtiest cars in the world, I think, at the moment.
Oh, okay.
Because we're not allowed to wash our cars with a hose or anything unless we take them down to the professional places at the moment.
Yeah.
So, for all those living in countries with lots and lots of water, such as the North America, don't ever take it for granted.
Yeah.
Because, in a world where what we now call climate change is affecting things, it's a shame that a resource like water is so, it's becoming endangered. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. That is going to be the next big stock market speculation.
Yes. It's interesting.
Over the next 20 years, water stock is going to be huge.
Well, I wouldn't be at all surprised. When we were on Lake Titicaca, try to make a joke out of that, in Peru, our guide was saying that that Peru is concerned because once the war on oil, and let's face it, that's what the wars are about, are over. The wars in the world may be about water. And if that's the case, they'll come and get Peru, because Lake Titicaca is one of the most, pristine sources of pure water in the world. And, wouldn't that be sad?
I had a very interesting conversation with a guy. Oh, this goes back probably 8-9 years now. But he said to me, he said, what do you think is, the most critical resource on this planet? And I said, well, probably air, And he said, no, it's water. And I said, why? And he said, he was asking me what did I think was going to be, the biggest, thing in the future in terms of economics and that sort of stuff. And I said, well, probably computers. He said, no, it'll be water. And I said, well, why is that? And he said, well, for a start, you cannot make the silicon wafers to make a computer without pure water.
Yes.
And on top of that, you've got all of the, the management crises around the world, with managing water.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked for a company which was a subsidiary of Vivendi.
Mm.
And apparently one of Vivendi's major investments is in water management.
Wow.
And he was saying, their company sort of logo is looking after the world's water.
Yeah.
And he was saying about how, this, like I said, was 8 or 9 years ago, and he was saying then that, Vivendi were buying water storage facilities everywhere they could get their hands on one.
Wow. Boy, oh boy.
So that's why I say, could be, over the next 20 years, major investment.
Interesting.
Mm.
Yeah. Aren't we supposed to be the most intelligent or the highest intelligent species on the planet?
Yeah.
One could question that. If aliens landed, I don't know whether they'd actually point to us for this sign of intelligent life.
No, I don't think so.
Anyway, that's the history of humankind. One stupid move after another.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Let's talk about what last week's podcast on positive and negative space received a fair bit of appreciation.
Comment, yep.
Yeah, which was really terrific. Obviously, struck a friendly, needed nerve there. We got a couple of lovely emails. One, of course, from you, Bob Fisher.
Yep.
And of course, another one from Landon Michelson. Thank you both. We really appreciate that. If I can just read a couple.
Sure.
One from Bob. first of all, g'day, Bob. Anyway, I've been a loyal listener, we know, and love your show.
I don't think you needed to clarify that point for us, Bob.
We know, Bob. We know you're there, mate. And he said, I did like the last podcast regarding positive and negative space. I've attached two images of the same person, but in different spaces. The use of negative space in the one image is an integral, defining part, which clearly says a lot about this person in the world, both the way they see themselves and the way the world sees them. And it's actually an image that Bob is doing on a study of anorexia. And he's taken the same woman out of her living room in Photoshop and placed her in a large empty white space in another frame. The difference between the two photographs, and Bob, I hope you don't mind, but I wouldn't mind putting them up on our website so that people can see exactly what we were talking about. Yeah. The removal of that person and putting her in a very large negative space actually adds more impact to her as the subject, which was really a lot about what we were talking about.
Precisely the point,
And Bob, if you don't mind, I would really like to put that up on our Shutters Inc. podcast website so that people can see what you've done and how powerful it is. That really worked. He also says, I'll be in Melbourne in February and would like to take Shelton to lunch. Melbourne is my second home and I'm planning on moving there eventually. Who says there's no such thing as a free lunch? No, I'll pay my part, but I'll be there, Bob. All right, so when you want to go to lunch together, mate, it'll be great to shake hands with the man who sent us so many wonderful emails and is a loyal listener to our podcast. So thank you very, very much. We really appreciate that. Landon, if I may, I also wouldn't mind. You have some excellent positive and negative space images that you forwarded to us, and if you don't mind, I wouldn't mind posting those up on the website. If I can also just read your email, because it says a couple of interesting things I think our listeners will be very interested in. First, I think you can find a photo subject anywhere every day. This is, of course, with reference to my podcast
photo a day
last
guy.
Week. My photo a day. Gee, I don't know whether I can do this comment.
I did have a look at some of that guy's images. There's some great stuff there.
The one that the link that Landon sent, which is now on Shutters Inc. podcast, isn't it?
Absolutely.
If you wanted to have a look, some of that. Well, it was that email. It was that website rather that put me right off, because I think, oh man, you know, I'm never going to be able to do that. But Landon makes an interesting point. He says, first, I think you can find a photo subject anywhere, every day. As you say, once you've developed your eye to see, you can find things everywhere. So he's teaching me, you know, he's referring myself to myself. And good on you for doing so, Landon. All right, that's good. Maybe going to exotic locations seems too easy for photo ops, but finding what is in our own backyard is often what other people find interesting too. Besides, nobody can shoot your area of the world as well as the person living in it every month. I registered a new domain name not long ago, but not sure what I was going to do with it. Now I think I will start a one photo a day project. So it's been good. We've inspired. Seems I photograph something every day anyway, so it might be a good challenge. I think it's a great idea. Besides, if you get stuck for ideas, just take one lens. And here's a good point. Just take one lens, one body, and look at something from a different perspective than before. Lay on the ground or take a stepladder, whatever it takes to get a fresh perspective. Or go to a place you've been lots of times, but at the other end of the clock. Shoot a place you see every day, but seldom at night or during weather events. Great fun. So it's a really great. That's a really great.
Yep.
Few suggestions. He goes on to say, if one photo a day is too much for your schedule, why not one photo a week that tells a story? A new friend of mine started a blog some time back, and this is a cool idea, called 52 People. He takes photos of people he meets along his journey of 1 year. And features just one per week. Kind of cool.
Yeah.
Landon, I'd love to see that link. I'm going to Google it, but if you could send us that link, I think that is really cool.
Absolutely.
52 people. It's sort of like that. Hopefully, it's different to that deck of cards that the American government distributed after 9/11. Who will be the Joker? But actually, it would be you could make your own 52, couldn't you? Your own deck of cards. you know, put the numbers, put the little cards, and put the people inside the frames of the cards. It would be interesting. Anyway, that's just off the top of my head. I think that's some really good ideas, Landon, and thank you very much for that. And today seems to be email answering day. We are going to get to a subject soon enough, I promise. But there's another one, of course, from Young, who asked us, let me see, about tripods, ball heads and pan heads, etc., etc., the advantages and disadvantages of those. Let's talk about this for a minute, because we have often spoken on this podcast about the value of a good tripod. Far too often I see photographers with these tiny, shaky, plasticky little tripods thinking, well, I don't need to spend too much money on a tripod, you know, as long as it holds the camera. But that's the key. It not only has to hold the camera, and a lot of these, you know, smaller ones do not, you know, the little, you know, they stay maybe 3-4 feet high, and they got little plastic legs or whatever. You know, they're not gorilla pods for, you know, which for its size is incredibly sturdy. But, you know, these things are shaking in the wind, and they're not holding, and they're more frustrating. I've taken photographers on tours, you know, overseas, and they've packed a little tripod thinking, oh, well, I can only take a little tripod with me. And they've used it. And the thing, in the end, they've just become frustrated because it's actually taking them longer and actually making the camera shakier than if they were hand holding it themselves. It's just so frustrating.
Yeah.
And the last thing you want your tripod to be is frustrating. It should unfold quickly. Your camera should just clip on very quickly and bang. You know, you should be right there, which is why I love my Manfrotto 058, which is a big mongrel of a tripod, really, to carry around. It's heavy, but at the top of it, there's this cool little switch. It's a quick release system for the legs. The legs, you twist these red, whatchamacallits, little red toggles that you just twist it, and the legs fall out.
Right.
Bang. Then you twist it again, push down, and the legs go back inside. It's one movement, and bang, the tripod's up. And then, you know, you've got a quick release head on the top. You just twist legs down, bang, set it up, camera on top, you're ready to go. And that is fabulous. I use that tripod for my commercial work, on my wedding work, and it's heavy to carry around.
What'd you say it is, the 058?
Manfrotto 058.
Right.
It's like I say, it's a big mongrel. It's really heavy.
Yeah.
But by the same token, it's also a heck of a lot easier to unpack and pack up. And I don't mind the weight. I'm a big, strong, strapping, muscular fella. So not. I don't mind carrying this thing around. But even when I travel, I take a Manfrotto 055, which again is not a small tripod, really. It's I have a 190 as well, but I very rarely use that.
Yeah.
And I take
my
055.
That's the one I've got.
Yeah, yeah. And the 190 for its size is a very sturdy little tripod.
Yeah.
It's just not tall enough for me. I like a tripod that'll come right up to my, you know, to my collarbone almost when I'm standing.
Oh,
and both those tripods do.
You're about my height, aren't you?
I'm 6 foot even.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, same. So.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I don't have the. Maybe it's not the 190 that I've got, but mine certainly comes up high enough for me.
Okay.
I'll have to dig mine out and see what it is.
Dig it out and let us know. So make sure, yes, a tripod is a valuable thing, and we've spoken about it.
Don't worry, I'll do that right now.
Yeah, all right. Shall I just talk while you're just rave on?
Yeah,
while you're
doing that? Don't mind me rummaging around in the background.
Clang, bang, if we hear, you know, tin cans, if we hear that famous sound effect, we'll know that you've found your tripod. But let's talk about, you know, what you've talked about, Young, and that is the need for a good ball head or joystick head or whatever, because a lot of tripods come packed with very, very difficult-to-use heads. I think the Manfrotto 3D head is one of the most difficult I've ever used. It's their default head that they put on their tripods, but don't buy it with that one if you don't mind me being honest. I would suggest that you get either a good ball head made by either Manfrotto or in America, I think they're called Bogan, or
I can see why they didn't use that name here.
No, yeah. Bogan is a cultural statement here.
Something you want your product associated with.
No, Bogan.
Not unless you were marketing Ugg boots anyway.
Yes, Ugg boots, tight black jeans, dirty jumpers, yeah, mullet haircut. there are quite a few.
Just to clarify for our international listeners, what we would refer to as a Bogan is probably fairly similar to what the Americans would refer to as trailer trash.
Yes, redneck trailer trash. Yes. If your working television is sitting on top of your non-working television, you might be a redneck. Yeah, Jeff Foxworthy. You gotta love him. So yeah, you've got these companies making these great tripod heads, and I would suggest that yes, you either get a ball head, which is very solid, and the good reason that they are solid is because they're short. They keep the center of gravity tight to the center point of the tripod, and in one movement, you know, you just undo the ball, and in one and your camera just freely moves around on that sphere, and it's
so basically
very,
you can pivot through all three axes.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you, Bruce. Yeah, absolutely. I love your the way you technically, you know, refine everything. Here I am going. Yes, you can move the brilliant. You can move it across all your three axes, and what that does is not only stabilize the camera, but it just makes the whole process less frustrating. You know, you don't have to loosen three different controls to get your camera into position by the time.
Which is my criticism with the head I've got, because I've got the 141RC.
Ah.
Which, as you're explaining, it has three separate screw controls, one for each axis.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I do find that very time-consuming to get set up. You know, I mean, it's probably fine if you're doing portrait work in a studio, but when you're out in the field and you just want to set up on a tripod to take, you know, maybe a time exposure of a creek or something, you know, it's just like, oh my God, it takes forever.
Yes, it's a pain in the assets that you, really put into your photographs. It really is. It takes so long, and, you really want to get the darn thing set up. And then if you have to make a slight adjustment, you got to go off and through those whole three controls again.
Mm.
The reason that a ball head is a great idea is that it's one control, and then when you tighten it, it's there.
Yeah.
And that, you know, they are really great. A pan head, you're probably talking, Young, is more along the lines of, you know, the video heads, which you don't use.
Like a fluid head.
Like a fluid head, yeah. Right. You don't use those for,
still
your still work, because they have no vertical option unless you turn your camera around. Of course, with video, you don't turn your camera, you know, on the side. So don't get one of those. But if you want a really great head, the one that I favor, it's the Manfrotto 322. Now, this is they have a 222, a 222 head, which is a joystick, and your camera sits on top of it, and you move it like a joystick, like a gaming joystick or, aeronautical joystick. And you can go through all three movements in just by grabbing it, squeezing it, and off you go. The problem with the 222 head is that when you go for a vertical composition, you put your camera on its side, it hangs over the side of the tripod, and it can be quite shaky. Manfrotto realized this, and so what they did is they made the 322 head, which is still a joystick head, but and I'll load up a photograph. I've got one photograph of this head. I'll load up a photo of it to the website so that you can see what we're talking about. They brought the part where your camera connects to closer to the actual ball, or closer to the center column. So you've still got the joystick facility, but the camera is lower on that joystick instead of sitting at the top. And that's a great head. You get the joystick option, which is one squeeze, zip, 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 bang, you're in position, but your camera is centered more on the tripod than it used to be. And when you compose for a vertical composition, it doesn't stick way out of the side of the tripod and cause some sort of imbalance and greater camera shake. So that actually is a fabulous tripod head. I would suggest that, you know, all of us have a look at our tripod head. It should be a quick release system, you know, so that a clip stays on the quick release clip stays on the bottom of your camera and slides straight into your head, bang, and it's connected. And also, it should be, the head itself should be quick and easy to use and very solid. What's the point of having a good solid tripod and having a really shaky head? You just completely negate the whole thing. Also, you know, there are times when you need really quick movement in your tripod, and, you know, a joystick head, or a ball head is a one movement thing. And, you know, because you'll see something, you'll want to move it, but you'll want to keep it on the tripod, and you want to be able to do it easily. People hate tripods often because they're such a pain in the butt to use, but they don't necessarily need to be if you've got the right tripod and the right head to go with it. So there's a couple of suggestions there. And I hope that helps.
Mm-hmm.
But let's move on to the subject we're going to wind up with today. And that is, again, from an email that was sent to us by Tsi Jung. Thank you again for keeping in touch. We really do love your emails, everybody. And may I just say that when you send us an email that either you know, commends us for what we're doing. That's not that our egos are, you know, having a problem, because you should see Bruce. I mean, that guy, man, he works his ego. And, you know, try getting him to shut up about himself, because he talks over me all the time, as you can tell. He's a very humble man, our Bruce. What was I talking about?
I think you were going to move on to the subject of panning.
of why we appreciate the emails. Yeah, that's right. Sorry. Yes, working on one cup of coffee this morning. Why we appreciate your emails is we do appreciate your commendation from the point of view that we know that we're talking about the right things for you, and that's really what we want to do. So when you let us know that that's the case, it's great. And we love your suggestions and your questions as well, because after, how many have we done now? 81?
This podcasts? Is 81.
You start to wonder, you know, if there's something you haven't talked about enough, if there's something you need to talk more about, what exactly the problems, you know, are that are recurring out there in the world of amateur and enthusiast photographers. So we really do appreciate it. Thank you very much. Tsi Jung has asked about panning, how to achieve pictures like the ones he's attached. Panning is a really unique technique that can evoke really draw in the viewer because it's a still picture with movement. It's its own contrast, and it's a great technique that isn't actually really hard to do. And I don't know that we do it enough, because you know, we think when we're photographing a moving subject that it has to be that we need a fast shutter speed in order to make sure that we freeze the action. But nothing could be further from the truth. Today we're going to have a look at going the other way, and also, you know, not keeping the camera still, but moving the camera with the subject, so that you do get this, you know, this really great panning technique, wherein you see both stillness and blur at the same time. We've talked about this with reference to flash, but now let's take that technique and add a whole new dimension to it. Okay, so first of all, what do you pan? What are the subjects that you can get a panning photograph? A photograph where you see something moving, the background is obviously blurred with movement, but the subject itself is relatively sharp in the image. Well, that could be really anything. It could be, you could be maybe in an Asian city where people are cycling past you. It could be a racing car. It could be an animal. It could be your dog, your cat. It could be a bird. Anything like that that can move across your plane, then that is a subject you can pan. Your children running across the backyard is something you can pan. And we should all just get out and give this a try, because it, like I said, is a really evocative image, because it conveys both movement and stillness in the one picture. And
I've actually got a shot that I'll upload to the site that I took of Max a couple of years ago, on his little plastic trike, screaming down the footpath outside of our house, because we're on a slight incline on our street, where I just sat on the grass, and as he came by, I panned with him, and so got him relatively sharp and the background all blurred. So I'll throw that up as one example.
Yeah. That would be great. I have some one that I took in Cambodia, outside the Royal Palace in Phnom Penh.
Yeah.
And another that I took in the streets of Vietnam. The Cambodia one I did digitally. But when I was in Vietnam, I did a panning photograph with film. And the story behind this basically is that I was in Hanoi, and I had this. I took a camera with me that was made in 1954. It was a Petri rangefinder, and I took it with me because I'd realized that for years I'd been photographing with purely automated cameras, and you know, they had meters inbuilt with autofocus, and they basically did everything. And I learned photography on a camera that did absolutely nothing. It didn't even have a meter. And I thought, well, I was at this camera swap meet stroke flea market a few years back, and there was this camera there, this mint condition rangefinder, a Petri rangefinder. And it had a leather case, it was hardly used, and it was 50 years old. And I bought it for $30. And I thought, I'm going to take this and a whole bunch of black and white film to Vietnam. Sure, I took my Nikon SLRs, but this was my pre-digital SLR days. This was 2001. I hadn't gone digital yet. And I needed to finish this roll of film because we were in Hanoi and there was a really great lab there. We were all just putting in our rolls of film to see how we'd gone. So I stood in the middle of the street, and as people cycled past me, I had my camera set up and I used my 50-year-old rangefinder to get these images. So I'll upload that one as well, showing that you can really do this with any camera. film, digital, SLR, rangefinder, you can do it with any camera. How do you do it? Well, first of all, you have to find the right subject. Usually a subject that's moving fairly straight and across your plane is, you know, in front of you is the best kind of subject. Traveling relatively straight, which would be good.
Linear movement, in other words.
Yes, linear movement. I'm finding it hard for words this morning. I don't know why, but
you got out of the wrong side of the bed this morning.
Well, if the bed had granted me as much sleep as I've wanted these last few couple of weeks, it'd be handy. So yeah. Maybe that's why. But yes, traveling. If your subject is zigzagging, it could be difficult. Not impossible, but could be difficult. But usually, you know, if you're cycling, if you're driving, if you're skateboarding, if you're running, it's usually fairly straight. So that's not so much of a problem. The shutter speed is the issue, and that will often be a matter of, well, you know, a decision on the spot, a bit of a gut feeling on the spot. I would suggest you start with about a 15th of a second, and if you're shooting digitally, you can experiment quite easily. If you're not, then you're going to have to, you know, wait till your film is processed and see how you go, and it could cost a little bit of money. The great thing about digital is that while you're standing right there and things are passing you, if you're standing in the middle of a busy street, especially one in an Asian city where there's a lot of cycling, that's a great subject. And, you know, you can, right there, you can judge exactly what's happening by checking your screen. But start with about a 15th of a second. And lens is up to you. Aperture is irrelevant, really. Normally, we would choose apertures according to our desired depth of field. But the most important thing here is shutter speed. And whatever aperture happens is, you know, is what happens, because the depth of field is irrelevant, because you're going to be blurring the background anyway. Probably a little more depth of field is handier to have, simply because it will ensure that as you pan, your subject will stay in focus, remembering that, you know, there might be a little bit of movement as not only as you pan, but also in the subject as well. So where you started with your focus may not exactly be where, you know, it winds up when you're actually taking the photograph. So could probably go for a little bit more depth of field than you normally would in a portrait setting, say. So start with around a 15th of a second. That's usually my default position on a panning photograph. And then put yourself where, naturally, you're not in any danger, if that's possible. But if you have to be a little bit dangerous, that's up to you. And then start basically panning away. You see your subject, and then you may need to practice this a few times. It's not easy, but I would actually suggest that you put your camera on manual focus. And then if you're going to be, you know, panning with a few subjects, because autofocus can tend to, you know, lose as you pan, and also as the subject moves, if you haven't got good tracking on your autofocus, I've personally found it easier just to manually focus. It could be because I've been doing manual focus for years and it doesn't worry me, but it can actually be a bit of a pain in the backside, the autofocus thing. I would, because if you've got enough depth of field to cover your sharpness, then you shouldn't have a worry. Judge the distance between you and where that subject will be by the time you actually open your shutter, by the time you actually press the shutter release button, manually set to that distance, and then away you go. Like I say, if you're a couple of feet out, whatever, you've got depth of field to cover it. If you're working at a 15th of a second, you will probably, in a daylight situation, have a fair bit of depth of field anyway, because it will naturally default to a pretty small aperture. So I personally prefer manual focus, so that you don't have to muck about with that. It's just all set, and away you go. Mark your target, and then as they move past you, pan with them. Make sure that you've actually started the movement before you press the shutter release button. And then as they reach the position, just before they reach the position where you want to start panning across the field, your field of view, open your shutter release button, remembering that there is a time difference between you pressing the button and the shutter actually opening. And then away you go. And as the subjects pass you, you move at the same speed. You've already sort of started that motion. You've put them in the center of the frame or wherever you're going to put them, and you've started that motion, and you follow through. Make sure that you follow through. You move your camera as the subject moves, and you follow through. Now, with an SLR, you've got to remember that your mirror will come up into your viewfinder and block your view.
Yeah.
So for a split second there, you're shooting blind.
Yep.
Yeah, you're completely blind. So you've got to start the movement before and make the pan part of that flow. And then even after your viewfinder is clear, you keep the movement just so that you've got this flow. It's like a follow through movement. You'll probably find it's
like a golf swing.
Sorry, what was that?
It's like a golf swing. You keep the swing going through when you pitch. You don't just stop your club after you hit the ball. You let the club follow through. It's exactly the same as what you're saying.
Yes. It's a follow through that will ensure that your subject basically retains its sharpness through. It doesn't make a difference to the photograph. It actually just makes a difference to how you learn to move, in the sense that, you know, you'll understand the movement of your subject, and the whole panning process is part of moving with them. Now, if you're shooting with a compact digital, and you can do this very well with a compact digital, remember that some of the older models have a bit of shutter lag. In fact, even a digital SLR has a little bit of shutter lag, but not too much, really, that you would concern yourself with. But shutter lag is experienced more on your compact digitals, and so you'd need to preempt that a little bit more. Now, let's add to this the idea of flash. When I was in, I think it was Xi'an in China a couple of years ago, we actually walked the streets to do this particular thing. We just thought, oh, well, let's go for a bit of a walk. We'd done our photography for the day, but we weren't satisfied. So we walked the streets at night, and there were cars and cycles, and the streets were fairly well lit. And we literally, we did a whole bunch of panning photographs, but we applied flash. So not only do you have the panning technique that we've just described, whereby you've got the subject still and sharp in the frame because they've stayed in the same relative position in the frame as you've moved, the background is blurred, they're sharp, but because you've used a 15th of a second, if they're cycling, for instance, there's going to be movement within the subject themselves. Their legs will be moving, or, you know, if they're walking or running, their arms and legs will be moving. So if you add flash as well, and rear curtain synchronization, which we've talked about before, you add yet another element of freezing that subject while you're panning. And it is a great technique. You get movement in the subject, movement in the background, but also absolute sharpness when the flash fires. You've got all these dimensions of movement and stillness in the one image. And that takes a little bit of practice. We got it right that night, basically. Poor cyclists who are going by, they're just cycling, minding their own business. And then these, you know, 10 people pop out of the darkness with cameras.
Paparazzi.
Yeah, that's right. You know, and it's falling off their bicycles. What? You know, as they're cycling through the streets of Xi'an. But that's basically the idea of it. Try in a daylight situation, you can still use flash, actually, provided that your subject is close enough. You can use fill flash. In Cambodia, I did that, and I've got a photograph of a monk on the bike on the back of a bicycle going past the royal palace, and I used a panning technique, a fairly slow shutter speed. Actually, when you see this photograph, you'll realize it was a fairly slow shutter speed because the subject is very blurred, I like the shot, even though the subject is not as sharp as it could have been. And then, of course, the one in Vietnam that I've used, and actually Kodak used it for an ad because I used Kodak T400CN film to do it, and they used it for a full page ad and paid me nicely for it, which was really great. Here I was just trying to finish a roll and I get paid nicely for a shot, which was terrific. I love it when things like that happen. So I'll upload a couple of these. If you've got panning photographs, or if over the next few weeks you think, hey, I'm going to give that a try, we'd love to see your pictures. The images that you've sent with, you know, both Bob and Landon with regard to positive and negative space were great. It makes me think, some of these photographs make me realize that I should give up doing this podcast and just hand it over to people like Bob and Landon because their photography is so good. But, we really appreciate you sending your photographs through, especially if you've listened to a podcast and then, hey, I'm going to try this, and then you email the photographs to us. It makes us feel like we're doing our job here at Shutters Inc. So give this a try. It's, in fact, There are so many subjects that this could apply to. You could literally walk out the front of your house, wait for a passing car, and in your street, and achieve this photograph. Bruce, you can do this as you cycle on the way to work. Anybody can do these photographs. If you walk to, if you work in the city, and you walk to work from the railway station in the morning, and you can take your compact digital with you, you can do it as you walk to work. There is no shortage of subjects for panning photographs. And the interesting thing about panning photographs, and I'm really glad you raised this, because the interesting thing about it is you can take the most mundane subject, and because it's moving in the frame, it's got a dynamic that suddenly makes it really very interesting. So give this a try. Choose a 15th of a second, set your camera up, and off you go, and then play with it. From faster shutter speed, longer shutter speed, play with it and see how you go. But give panning a try. It's a really great technique. It's a whole lot of fun and adds another dimension of still versus movement in what we call still photography, which doesn't necessarily need to be.
Absolutely. Thank you, matey.
No worries. A pleasure. Excellent. Absolute pleasure. And again, thank you all for your interaction. We really appreciate it, don't we, mate?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I love seeing the photos that come through on the email.
It's great. Actually, sometimes it's scary because, I, like I say, Bruce, I'm thinking, what am I doing, you know, as the teacher on this podcast? Because some of your photography, you guys, is fabulous. Mm. Bob, that photograph, that study that you're doing on anorexia is incredibly, is very, very interesting. It's a terrible thing. And I remember being on Bondi Beach in Sydney just a few weeks ago. I was up there for the Shutterbug event. You remember that, Bruce?
Yeah, absolutely.
And myself and Greg Bayer and Otto Mellar and Dan Paris, fellow photographers, we thought, oh, we're sick of this. We were helping this guy put together this event. We thought, oh, to hell with this. Let's go down to Bondi and do some photography. And it was a wintry, awful, awful day. And Bondi is normally a beach where everybody goes and takes their clothes off and jumps into the water. I mean, literally, takes their clothes off and jumps into the water. Very liberated beach, Bondi Beach.
Yeah.
But this day, you know, all there, it was very, very cold, so nobody was going to be that stupid. Not that that's why we went, but on the subject of anorexia, this girl walked down the beach, and we could see she was very slim, but she had jeans on and a jumper on, and or as Americans say, a sweater on. And all of a sudden, she just stood on the beach, and she disrobed, and she got down to her bikini. And, of course, we were four blokes, so we were watching. And sick, aren't we? You know, it's just a male thing, anyway. And we realized that as she disrobed and, you know, stood there in her bikini, that she was anorexic. And it was extremely sad to see, because she had this viewpoint of herself as she, you know, just merrily pranced into the freezing water, that she looked good, you know, that she had, and she certainly did not. It was very, very sad. She looked incredibly unhealthy. And Bob, I'd love to see what you come up with on this study, because it certainly is an issue. And photographically, Bob, I'd be very interested to see how you go with that project and what you plan to do with it. But we'll upload the photos you sent, because the impact that you make with positive and negative space with this particular photograph that you've sent is very impressive, and I really appreciate you sending it to us. Thank you for that.
Absolutely. All right, mate. Thank you. And
thank you.
We will talk with you again next week.
I'm looking forward to it, mate. And hello to everybody again out there, and thank you very much again for, well, listening and for keeping in touch.
Absolutely. And remember, if you want to drop us an email, shelton@audiotu.com, or if you want to email me, studio@audiotu.com, and of course you can bookmark shuttersincpodcast.com to just get the posts that are relevant to Shutters Inc. and nothing else.
Great. Yeah, I'll get those. We'll get those organized for you so you can have a bit of a look at what we're talking about. Again, beautiful. Thank you all.
All right, mate. Talk to you next week.
You bet. See you soon. Bye.
Now, how much of that did you understand?
Audio to You delivers the best quality podcasts direct to your desktop or portable. You be the boss. Hear what you want to hear.
When you want to hear.
Hit us today. And remember, Control D to bookmark. AudioToYou.com.
It's all over, Marge. It's all over.